Good morning and welcome to ASI Radio's Tuesday morning show, where some of ASI's most opinionated editors talk promo products and more. I am guest hosting today. I'm Joe Haley.
We're like flying by the seat of our pants.
Yes,
we are. I've been here twice in the last 5 weeks, and you know they put me in the big chair to steer the ship.
Do you feel like the big man?
I do.
That's cool.
I feel very honored and very special to be here with some of my favorite people. And first, we'd like to introduce the birthday girl. That would be SGR's editor, Michelle Bell.
Well, thank you.
Happy birthday, Michelle.
Thank you.
How old are we this year?
38.
How old are we really this year?
39.
So did you get any cool presents for your birthday?
I did. I got a little Wookiee doll that when you squeeze it, it growls.
Chewbacca. Oh, that's cute. Who gave you that?
Somebody.
Okay, a boy, I think. All right. Moving on. Also in the studio with us today, I'm going to use English, it's Advantage's editor, Kathy Houston. Kathy, good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
And how are you today?
Good. How are you?
I am
How
terrific.
Was your vacay?
My vacation was terrific. I had a great time. I'm glad to be back. I'm energized and ready to go. I am.
All right.
Also in studio with I can't speak today.
Yeah.
Also in studio with us today, manning the tech board, is Craig Veltri. Very good. And as usual, answering your calls today is Facebook Vinny Driscoll. Oh, so if you have a question for us, if there's anything on your mind you want to talk about, give us a call today at 215-953-4979. Today we're looking at what's the average profit margin at which distributors are selling and how low is too low. So we're going to open up the phone lines, but first we're going to start it off with today's show rundown, Kathy.
Yeah, okay. Like Joe said, we're going to take your calls on average profit margins, and I'm going to give you probably about 5 tips for the incentive market. Joe is going to let you know marketing's highest spenders, and I'm also going to give you tips for striking it rich from a real housewife.
Is it one of the good real housewives or the...
Well, you'll have to wait and see.
All right.
You'll have to wait and see. Michelle is going to let you know why social listening is crucial for your business. And we're going to give you a list of our favorite things for this week. And Michelle, who is never one to curse at work, is going to let you know whether or not it's okay. But first, we have the news with the birthday girl herself.
We begin this morning with product safety news. Build-A-Bear Workshop has recalled nearly 30,000 lapel pins in the United States and Canada due to excessive lead levels. The company said the pins, which were sold from July 2009 to October 2010, contained paint on the surface that exceeded allowable levels of lead. Check out Promogram today for details. On to top 40 financial news now. Second quarter reports are in and many companies are showing great results. Broder Brothers said it increased sales by 7% and gross profits by 26% in the quarter. Inner Workings reported a record quarter, increasing its sales by 29% from the same period in 2010. And 4 Imprints North American division grew its revenues in the second quarter by 18%. Distributor acquisition news now. National Premium has acquired CAM Inc., a $7 million distributor based in Overland Park, Kansas. The deal is expected to bring National Premium's annual revenues to the $30 million mark. As part of the acquisition, CAM will continue to operate under that name through the end of 2011 and will then transition to the National Premium name in January. And finally, make sure to check out the latest episode of The Joe Show in Promogram today. Joe, what's hot for today?
Well, Michelle, we are featuring something called the Power Decal. It's pretty cool. Picked it up in Chicago. Showed it on today's Joe Show. You're going to have to tune in to see exactly what a Power Decal is.
I can't wait.
Now, just coming into the studio right now, sauntering in, is our counselor editor, and that would be Andy Cohen.
I'm here rushing to put my headphones on.
Get all geared up.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good morning, Andy. How are you?
I'm doing great.
You brought a guest. I'm terrific.
I did bring a guest with me. We have Christopher Blakesley from Broder Brothers. We have a lot of Broder Brothers people in the house today, so we figured let's have Chris join us and talk about Broder and the apparel market in general.
Well, Chris, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
It is nice to have you here.
Now, Chris, we've been talking this morning about a lot about Broder Brothers business. You guys just came out with the second quarter report that said that business is doing pretty well for you guys. So what's behind that? What's behind the success at the company?
We just released earnings this past Friday with our traditional earnings call and reported a great second quarter and also a great first half in a pretty challenging e-peril economy and market this year. We actually feel that the things that we've been working on for the last 18 to 24 months continue to be the things which are driving our success. We've had a pretty widely marketed and publicized program called our Total Team Guarantee, which is a three-part guarantee to customers. And it basically says that we will be in stock on all the core products. We will ship those products accurately to customers, or we'll pay them for the inconvenience, and that we won't be undersold in the industry as well. And if we are, we'll compensate them for that difference as well. And so that's been the hallmark of what we've been doing at a high level. And then underneath that, we've really shifted our focus over the last year in particular toward consultative tools for our customers. And the number one challenge that we heard from our customers coming out of 2009 and even continuing into this year with what's been going on with cotton pricing is finding new ways to grow their business. And a lot of our tools prior to this year were dedicated around product education, but not necessarily how you take that information and turn it into a sales pitch that goes to an end user. Mm-hmm. So we've designed have invested in significant tools that we give away for free, frankly, to our customers to help them become more effective in selling to end users.
Do they access those from your website or just by calling your company or how they...
There are a variety of methods. Many of the tools are available on the website, and those tools in particular are customizable for customers. We also have released back in April this year the first version of something that we call Selling What Sells, which is a roughly 60-page book that takes our 500-page big book and breaks it into 26 good, better, best product categories. And each one of the spreads gives selling tips on how to approach end users. It also provides insight on different types of end user markets that those products can be sold into. It was such a large success for us that our customers said, you know, this is really great. And, of course, it is loaded with selling tips for our customers. But they said, we'd like to have an end user version that we could just hand to the end user to help their process of selecting apparel become easier. And so we've just last month released the end user version of Selling What Sells.
Mm-hmm. It's like the End User Joe Show.
Yeah. Well, it's always right. Good to educate the distributors and the buyers.
That's mm-hmm. right. They both need to also be on the same page. Now, Chris, the apparel market obviously is the number one category as far as products that are sold in the ad specialty industry. So what's your outlook as far as apparel sales are concerned? How are they doing now, and how do you think they'll be doing for the next 6 to 12 months?
Well, I think everything at this point, all the signals at least, are very positive signals. Of course, anyone who's buying apparel, especially in this market, has witnessed just a meteoric rise of cotton futures over the last year and a half, and that had a significant impact on prices in the industry. And, you know, we hear from our customers all the time that just because prices go up doesn't mean that an end user's budget goes up.
Right.
And so the sort of equal and opposite reaction is going to be that unit volumes are going to decrease, and we've seen unit volumes decreasing consistently throughout the year. As a matter of fact, the industry unit volume data came out from Crest yesterday and reported that in July unit volumes were down in the industry about 10 points. They were down 11 points in June. The good news is that cotton futures, which were above $2 per pound earlier this year, are now back at about $1 per pound. And so as quickly as they rose, they're falling. And that won't result in an immediate change in price because most of the large mills buy 6 to 9 months in advance. As we get toward the end of this year and as they burn through the remaining sort of high-cost cotton, we expect that based upon unit volumes, they're going to want to bring those prices down as quickly as possible, and we would expect to see things falling. That is probably the number one thing that could impact overall apparel sales in the channel.
I'm sorry, Joe. Let me ask you this. We talk a lot about on this show to distributors about pricing and how they talk to their customers about prices. As far as apparel costs are concerned, there's wild fluctuations. There can be wild fluctuations. So how do you suggest that distributors talk to their clients about these price fluctuations that, you know, for 6 months ago, 6 months to a year ago, we were talking about being so high as far as cotton is concerned, and now it's come down. So how do they you know, how do they talk to their customers about that? What's the education process that they need to do?
I think that our customers who have had the best success, and we've had the opportunity to see quite a few sort of case study examples of what our customers have done, is that they've provided their end users with the information about cotton and what's been happening. There have been a lot of great sort of independent third-party articles written about the rise in cotton futures, and so I think they've taken the path of trying to over-educate their end users so that the end user understands it's not something that anyone in this channel is putting upon them. It's right. It's a dynamic which exists globally. I think the other thing is that where we have customers who take the approach of positioning apparel, decorated apparel, not as a commodity, but as a value-added product that can create substantial impressions, especially if the item is matched up to the end user's real wants and needs, so that the end user is going to want to wear that item, it would be something similar to what they would wear personally at home. We found that if they take it away from being a commodity story, it changes the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's something that we definitely discuss here, the idea of trying to get away from that commodity conversation for sure.
With the uptick in the price of cotton and therefore the apparel that's made out of cotton, have you seen a growth in apparel that's made from poly blends, or like alternative fabrics like bamboo or hemp?
I wouldn't say the specialty products have changed much, because their prices, you know, historically have been higher. What we've definitely seen is a movement of volume from one bucket to another. And so you'll see a transition from 6 ounce product to 5.5 ounce product, perhaps 5.5 ounce product to 4.5 ounce product. So things with less cotton content overall. Certainly blends are another option. And so we have seen that. We sort of consider that to be customers trading down. We also do make the assumption that as cotton prices have risen and apparel prices have risen, that customers may trade out of apparel for a period of time as well into other products that are available at a lower price in the industry.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, that's great advice and great results that you guys have had at Broder. So we thank you for joining us here today.
Sure.
We always like to steal people when they're in the building. They happen to be here Tuesday at 10 o'clock. We like
visiting,
to
yeah.
steal them away. So we appreciate you giving us a few minutes.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
All right.
Chris, thank you. You're going to stay on board here with us for the remainder of the show?
I can do that, sure.
Great.
We're
going to
be talking about profit margins. You can help us take some distributor calls.
So we have some calls on the line, but before we go to them, we are going to stop for a message from today's show sponsor, I Promote You.
This portion of ASI Radio is sponsored by I Promote You. Distributors and salespeople, consider affiliating with I Promote You today. Be more productive, be more profitable, be happier, and retain your independence. I Promote You, the smart choice. For more information, call 800-857-3370 or visit ipromoteyou.com.
And we are back. Okay, we're going to go to
Joe's doing some chair dancing.
Yeah,
and it's a little scary.
Well, head bobbing never hurt anyone on Tuesday morning. All right, here we go. We're going to our phone lines. Today's question, it actually came from a Facebook response sent to us by Jennifer Moyer, and I'll read it to you. It's let's talk about profit margins, she writes. What's the average margin distributors are selling at? How low is too low without cheapening the industry, and when is it time to not be the lowest bidder so you don't end up working harder for much less? Do people still pay for quality service or go for the lowest bidder all the time? So that prompted this week's question, but we're going to get
Take
Andy's
some
insight.
Calls?
Well, no, we're going to go to Andy first.
Forget those calls. You got me.
Andy has all your answers. What's the average
profit
margin?
The average profit margin that distributors have had for years now is about 34%. It was 34.2% in 2010, which is our latest State of the Industry report. It's been pretty steady around there. It's fluctuated. It's gone to 35. It's gone to 33.5. But it has, for the most part, since 2001, between 2001 and 2010, stuck around the 34% mark. The larger distributors tend to get a little bit more, you know, more towards the 35, and the smaller is more towards the 33.5. But those are, you know, you can make a lot on that point and a half as far as margin is concerned. But it does tend to stick around that 34% margin.
How low is too low?
You know, that depends on what your business model is. If you're going to market with a low cost, low, you know, low price type of branding, then you're going to have a lower margin as far as, you know, it's pretty natural. But if, like we're talking about with Chris here, if we were to, you know, you're talking about getting out of the commodity conversation, then you have to raise that. You know, you have to be raising that to the point that it's beating the 34%, you know, so you're getting the 40% on every order. We talk to plenty of distributors that say that they try not to accept any order that's less than 40% margin. Chris, what do you think as far as margin is concerned?
Well, I mean, it's not a conversation that we necessarily have very frequently with our customers, but I would agree when we do have that conversation, they tell us that they're, you know, shooting in that 35% range.
Right.
And of course, that's one of the reasons that, you know, in any catalog that we would produce or any book that would end up in the hands of an end user, the price that we would publish in that is going to be the retail price.
Sure.
Of course.
All right. Hit the phone lines.
All right,
Let's
Andy,
go.
I had another question for you, but we'll go to the phones first. We are going to line one, and we have Jessica. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Terrific. How are you?
Good.
You have a question for us?
I do. So I have a couple of clients that always go with the lowest bidder, and I'm just wondering what tips you can offer on how I can deal with that.
That's tough, Jessica. If you're dealing with clients that are consistently going with the lowest bidder, tell Hank to just turn that around. Turn his headphone
there
around.
There we go. The other way around.
Jessica. We were just doing some technical things here in the studio. If you're dealing with clients that are solely going with the lowest bidder, then I would say that maybe those aren't your best clients.
Yeah, get some new clients.
Not that you want to necessarily walk away from potential business, but like we've been saying here so far this morning, you can't just play in the commodity world.
No.
It's just not going to work unless that's your, like I said before, unless that's your go-to-market strategy and you are the low-cost provider. I don't think that can work for you. I don't think it can work for the small distributor. The biggest distributors that are working on price volumes and can, you know, afford to give up some of their margin because they're regaining that on volume, they can probably do it. I'm not sure that a distributor that's smaller than the biggest can actually do that. So I would suggest that you don't necessarily play that game.
Yeah.
I think it starts with how you brand yourself and market your own company from the start. You know, if you're marketing yourself as the professional that's going to give you all this quality and added value, then, you know, they're going to know you're not messing around. You're not just going for the lowest price.
You know, it's like feeding that proverbial stray cat. You know, they're going to keep coming back for that lowest price. Maybe offer to them occasionally and say, look, we can make a deal on this one, but this is where we need to be on, you know, certain orders. The other thing is show them the, you know, service you provide, whether it's the art, the fulfillment, you know, the imprinting quality, whatever it is. Show them that service and say, well, where do you want me to cut price?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
We can get a little lower on the imprint quality. You know, we can ship it as slow as possible rather than overnight, however you're doing it. So show them, you know, where do you want me to take this money from?
Yep.
Does that help, Jessica?
Yep, that helps a lot. Thanks, guys.
All right, stay on the line. Vinny's going to get your information. We just had another guest pull
we
up to
did.
The table.
Hank Harrell, the Executive Vice President of Sales and Marketing at Broder, joined us. As I said, we had Broder people in the house here today at ASI, so we have Hank joining us. Hank, thanks for popping on a microphone there and jumping in.
Problem.
Let me ask you, as a head of sales and marketing at a big company, how do you suggest that distributors try to get out of this commodity conversation that, you know, we were talking about with Chris a little bit before as well? How do they combat that? How do they combat those customers that are just looking for the lowest price?
Well, there's going to be customers that price is first and
Absolutely.
Foremost. You have to decide whether those are the customers that you want to focus your business on.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go out and find other customers that are willing to pay for the value and the service that you bring other than price.
Right.
All right, we're going to go to line two where we have Patrick on the line. Good morning, Patrick.
Yeah, good morning, guys. How are you?
We're terrific. How are you?
All right, good. I've been listening in, and you've kind of hit on this to a degree already, but let me ask it anyway. Just what's the best way that I can explain to my clients that I have to raise prices?
You could go at it from a couple different angles. Number one, I would say you could talk about, like we were saying with Chris earlier, the costs of apparel that have been going up. Now, granted, they might see cotton futures going down, but as Chris said before, that doesn't necessarily mean that that prices immediately on the goods that you're selling are going down in concert with that.
I just find it striking, again, that for some reason people assume that only in this industry do prices not go up.
Yeah,
like we operate in a bubble.
Yeah, well, but they've dealt with for a long time, I think, costs going down, especially as apparel and certain tech products are concerned, you know, not to lump those together, but prices have gone down, you know, for years. So it's been, I think, since 2008, when, you know, the economy kind of tanked, that pricing has become such an issue for people. So, I mean, I can understand it, but what do you guys think, Chris or Hank? What do you guys think as far as, you know, how to delve deeper into this conversation of the need to maybe raise prices?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we talk about with our salespeople all the time, who obviously have had to get pretty acquainted with the concept of talking about prices going up, is that, you know, we really need to understand what's important to our customer.
Right.
And, you know, to the previous question, there are going to be customers and end users who are only concerned about price because bidding is how they distribute their business. But at the same time, you know, we find in many cases that we have a customer who believes that they want the lowest price. That's how they phrase the question, but or the request. But when we start to dig into what's really important, we find out that they have to manage a total cost, mm-hmm. and they consider that to be a low total cost. So there are other things around how the goods are going to be shipped to them, to your point about the type of product that they're buying. Perhaps you trade them down into a product that has a lower price but still has a high profit margin, so you sort of accomplish their objective and your objective. But one of the things that we just don't see enough of happening in the industry is questioning around what the true customer needs are, how the product is going to be used, how it's going to be positioned, and how you can influence those things to give the customer better overall value.
Yeah, I think Chris brings up a great response to this caller's question, and I forgot the caller's name. But
Patrick,
I would suggest, like Chris just said, that you don't it's not necessarily a price conversation that you want to have with customers. It's the value that they receive. So, they're looking for a certain kind of product, or maybe even a specific product. But maybe it's incumbent upon you and your company to find that product or a similar product at a lower cost. And then your margin is still the same or maybe even better, but lower to them. So as long as they see that it's lower to them, it might not necessarily be lower to you. So there might be some sourcing issues that you need to do, or like Chris was talking about before, some good, better, best options.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what you had previously. Right. That you can say to your client, you had this option previously, and it's at this cost now. We can also do it for a higher cost at a, maybe a better product, or a lower cost at what might be a lower quality product. You know, and just understand that they need to know that.
You know, if this isn't a reorder, then maybe the conversation starts with, what do you need this product for?
Right.
What are you trying to achieve with it? You know?
Well, right. That's what Chris was saying.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. maybe a coffee mug's not what you need, or maybe a pen's not what you need. It might be something else. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, find the product that's going to help generate the needs of the client. All right, Patrick, hopefully that helps. Stay on the line, and Facebook Vinnie Driscoll will get your information and send out your Visa gift card.
Great, thank you.
We are going to go to line 5 with someone with a very great name. Joe, you're on the air. Joe, are you there? Good, how are you? You've got a question about government contracts.
Well, with customers I have that I'm not doing bids on, because of quality and pricing and service that I give, I'm not having a problem with pricing, but I've moved into bidding on government contracts, and with some of the suppliers that I've used, I've found that even in searching around, some of the bids that been out there that they went with has been lower than what my actual cost would be. And so at the same time, I don't want to start sending out bids anticipating that I have to cut my margin down so low. Is there something that I need to look into as far as with suppliers, or something as far as in getting around this? Because I've noticed that with a couple of them, and with it being so much below the cost that I'm getting it at, it seems as though when I set out a bid that, you know, I'm overpricing the items.
Well, I think I think you have to be careful in bid situations, and I'll certainly let the Broder execs weigh in on this as well. But, you know, when you're in a bid situation, especially when it's a government contract, price does matter, and it's certainly going to be a factor in the buyer's decision. If you're finding that that the buyer is going with costs that are lower than you can provide, or they're lower than you're even getting from suppliers, then I'm not sure that you can bid in that situation. You know, you can try, and you can try to emphasize the service and the quality and the you know, whatever it is that you offer as far as personal service is concerned. But they are looking at price. You know, and let me ask Chris or Hank, what do you guys think? You know, when distributors come to you with lower cost requests, you know, they're dealing in a bid situation, they're looking for help.
We certainly have a contingent of our customers who participate regularly in bids.
Sure.
And I'll say
probably government bids as well.
Many government bids, and there are other large institutions, hospital networks,
right,
schools, universities, and other groups that conduct these in many cases online bids. And you know, I our perspective would be they sound dangerous for a lot of reasons. One is that it's very difficult in some cases to know that you're actually quoting a like item, which is obviously extremely important, especially if price is going to be the issue. So I'd say, you know, one piece of advice would be to ensure that you have all of the specific parameters of which types of products or what specific products meet the requirements of that bid, so that you're not bidding something that might, you know, from the start be out of the price range. The other thing is that we have heard of many examples from our customers this year of exactly what the caller is mentioning, and that is that people are quoting on these bids at costs that you can't buy and ship the product for,
right,
much less embellish. And now, I don't necessarily have a particular point of view on why someone would do that, mm-hmm, but in discussions with our customers, you know, their point of view seems to be that these might be companies who are trying to keep production operations running, and they're deciding to use these as lost leaders, mm-hmm, in order to do that. In other cases, they might feel that it is necessary for them to do that to remain in the bid distribution process. So if they don't win a certain percentage of these bids, they'll no longer be able to participate in that network. So I would caution companies in the industry from concluding that what's been going on with bid activities relative to cost and price this year is indicative of what might be happening in the future.
Right.
But in general, I think they're pretty tricky.
Yeah. Well, Joe, hopefully that gives you some ideas.
Yeah, because some of the companies, they have money that they don't have to use in bids. And one problem becomes is that if you set yourself out there and you're that much higher, they kind of get the impression that you're overpricing things, and then they don't come back to you with the some of the other items. And that might be, but I didn't know if it was a matter of suppliers' relationship or what he just said is probably where they are doing that to try and maintain business or relationship.
All right. Well, Joe, thanks a lot for your call. Stay on the line. Vinny's going to get your information and send you out a Visa gift card. One of the things I would question, too, is the quality of the products that they're actually bidding on. You know, where are they getting these products for? Are they inferior? And all that's going to do is reflect on the distributor once that, you know, end buyer gets that product in hand.
Yeah. Say,
you know, this is cheap. We don't want to do business with you anymore. So, you know, I think it's a dangerous practice.
Yeah, quality counts for sure.
All right, we have time for one more caller. We're going to go to line one where Walter is on the line. Vinny, line one, please. Walter?
Yes, good morning, y'all.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, doing fine. And yourself?
Good. What do you got for us?
I just wanted to make a comment to the lady that called in a few minutes ago about bidding in lowest price. I've got a situation right now that third-time customer or potential customer or client coming to me and want product or ideas, and I've given her ideas two times in a row, and both times they've taken the ideas and gone back to either what they were using before or to another distributor out there. So this is the third time they're coming to me, and so I decided that what I'm going to do is, rather than give her free ideas again, I'm going to charge her a consulting fee, or lay it out plainly for her that this time, you know, that my experience in the industry, I have a lot of experience, and that my experience and my expertise is worth so much per hour. And if you choose to go with my ideas, that I'll apply that, you know, that charge, and take it off the bill. But if you choose to take my ideas and go somewhere else with them, well, you'll be billed for my time and expertise.
I think that's a great idea, and it's one that we've definitely espoused on this show frequently. And you know, I like to hear from a distributor that's actually trying it. How do you think she's going to react to that kind of approach?
Well, I've never actually done that myself. I've been in the industry for two decades now. I've never tried it, but I personally think she's going to run.
Right.
But that's fine, because I, you know, if I take the time out of my day and come up with ideas and spend, you know, 4 or 5 hours coming up with excellent ideas to help them, then, you know, why should I do it for free?
That's right. And I think that distributors certainly do need to position themselves mm-hmm. as consultants. Yeah. You're not just a commodity provider. You are a marketing consultant to your clients, and that's, you know, one way to go about it for sure.
Well, Walter, thank you for the call. Stay on the line. Vinny is going to get your information and send you out a Visa gift card. And, hey, let us know in the future, you know, what happens with this client.
Certainly will.
All right, thank you. Well, we are out of time. I'd like to first thank Hank and Chris for stopping by today and sitting in on the radio show. We didn't get to our favorite things, but if you go to our website, www.asicentral.com/radio, you can see our favorite things for this week. And again, thank you to our today's show sponsor, iPromoteYou.